I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, yet another blue state is trying to make it more difficult for independent journalists to investigate fraud. Gee, I wonder why. Plus, home listings skyrocket in Washington state after the passage of an income tax targeting wealth, and changes to the bail system could send our state even further into a public safety spiral. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. Wowza. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Yet another blue state mired in fraud scandals has decided rather than, I don't know, address the fraud in any sort of meaningful way, they'll make it more difficult for independent journalists to investigate fraud. We saw a lot of similar things like this happen during the legislative session in Washington state this year. Thankfully, our session was very short, so maybe they ran out of time to try to hamstring journalists who want to go out and see how your taxpayer money is spent. But really not a surprise that we're seeing this right now in California. It's been dubbed the Stop Nick Shirley Bill. We'll discuss, but keeping in mind that we've seen efforts like this, comments like this in Minnesota, Washington State, California. There's a common theme here. There's a common party in power. And it's important that we all work to stop any sort of efforts that would make it more difficult to expose how taxpayer money is being spent or misspent. But before I get to all of this, I can't believe I didn't mention this on the show yesterday. I really go back and forth between who is the more intolerable governor. Is it Bob Ferguson of Washington State, or is it Gavin Newsom of California? I think for now it's Gavin Newsom of California. And I just would not be able to tolerate that man in the White House for 4 years. So please, God, let's make sure that doesn't happen. But when all of this fraud was being exposed by Nick Shirley, the independent journalist in California recently, specifically around hospice care, you know, he was going and doing what he did in Minnesota. He was knocking on doors. He was saying, hey, here are these licensed hospice facilities. There's like a billion of them in this one derelict building. There's all these $200,000, $300,000 cars outside. He was showing you the evidence so you could weigh it, right? And what did Gavin Newsom's office do? Well, they attacked him personally. They didn't say, hey, that's really serious. We'll look into that. They made fun of him for doing it. They were putting out these memes, like accusing him of being, I don't know, like a creepy child sex predator. And they put out this meme that was supposed to depict Nick Shirley with a bunch of cameras on him that said, hey, can I see your kids? Which is just weird. I mean, he's exposing fraud at, yes, daycare centers, but also hospice facilities. And then they shared this article that purported in the San Francisco Chronicle to debunk some of Nick Shirley's reporting, which, of course, we know that Nick Shirley's reporting has already led to arrest. It said, fact check, after Nick Shirley exposed widespread hospice fraud, in quotes, because multiple hospices operate at the same location, turns out 9 out of the 10 hospices at one location don't even bill state taxpayers for hospice care. So they were doing everything they could to ignore all the ample evidence that there was something very seriously wrong happening in the state of California, and doing what you do when you feel like you're backed into a corner. You attack the messenger. You attack the messenger. And so they attack Nick Shirley. And then when what he started to uncover there became impossible to ignore, and the feds were coming in and they were serving search warrants, what did Gavin Newsom do then? Well, he acted like he was on top of it all along. He put out a post on X saying California is again leading the charge against large-scale identity theft and hospice fraud. Today, we're taking decisive action against 14 providers who tried using stolen identities to bill Medi-Cali for non-existent hospice services. I mean, can that sentence, that first sentence, even be real? California is again leading the charge against large-scale identity theft and hospice fraud. First of all, if you were leading the charge against widespread and large-scale fraud, then it wouldn't be widespread and large scale in your state. Because if you were taking it seriously all along, it wouldn't be able to exist in the way that it exists in your state. And just a couple of days before that, he was making fun of the independent journalist, Nick Shirley, who is responsible for exposing a lot of that fraud and getting a lot of these criminal investigations ongoing. So just totally disingenuous. And then, amidst all of this, enter Assembly Bill 2624, Privacy for Immigration Support Services Providers. Now, I'm going to get into some of the details of this, but very similar to a bill that they tried to put forth in Washington State this session that would have sought to add additional layers of protection and even anonymity for people who, in Washington State, it was around childcare services, because they're like, oh, these independent journalists are knocking on doors of Somali daycares and they're harassing them, so we need to protect their addresses. We need to remove them from state databases. We need to make it a crime if you expose where some of these facilities are, even though they're funded with taxpayer dollars. So I'll go into some details of what the bill would do, but here's Nick Shirley's response to it. Again, it's being called the Stop Nick Shirley Bill. He said, California is trying to pass a bill that would criminalize investigative journalism with misdemeanors, $10,000 fines, imprisonment, and content takedown. The proposed bill is titled AB 2624 and was made after I exposed mass fraud by immigrant groups in America. Under AB 2624, government-funded entities like the Somali Learing Daycare Centers would be protected from being exposed if they operate inside California. The enemy truly is within. When our politicians would rather protect fraudsters and illegal migrants, it's time for us to stand up or face mass oppression from the traitors who rule over us. And this is really so many layers of absolute authoritarianism. And I would argue what they're proposing in this bill is totally against the First Amendment to the Constitution. But as we've discussed on the show just this week, not a lot of concern for what's constitutional when lawmakers in these deep blue states go to pass policies. I mean, the example we gave yesterday, the income tax on millionaires in Washington State, blatantly unconstitutional. They passed it anyway. So they don't care if it's unconstitutional or not. So a couple key things that this bill in California would do. It would establish an address confidentiality program. Like, what is this, witness protection? Literally, they're treating these operators of hospice facilities or things run by immigrants or to serve immigrant communities like they're in the witness protection program when they're taxpayer-funded entities. It would establish an address confidentiality program for a designated immigrant support services provider, employee, or volunteer. So it basically says we're going to protect their addresses and their identities, and we're going to punish people who expose those protected addresses or expose information on individuals who are enrolled in this program. Now, here's where it gets really, really scary, because they tried to regulate essentially what people like Nick Shirley or any other citizen would be able to publish about these protected facilities on social media. Again, just very clearly against the First Amendment. It says a person, business, or association shall not knowingly publicly post or publicly display, disclose, or distribute on the internet the personal information or image of any designated immigration support services provider, employee, or volunteer. So, you know, the journalist going out and recording and just showing pictures of the outside of these addresses, against the law. Confronting on video the individuals in there, asking them questions, against the law, if they have now enrolled in this program. And then it says, and this is like, how do you even control this? It says, if you do that with the intent to do one of the following: incite a third person to cause imminent great bodily harm to the designated immigrant support services provider or employee. So if you post something, like if Nick Shirley posts, you know, a picture of the Quality Learing Center, and then some unhinged individual decides to go there and burn it down, now it's Nick Shirley's fault? How does he know what somebody's going to do with that information? And then it says, if you post it and you threaten the designated immigrant support services, well, that's against the law already. You can't threaten great bodily harm on an individual. It's already against the law, so that's a moot point. And then it says, a designated immigration support services provider or volunteer whose personal information or image is made public as a result of a violation of this paragraph can then sue the individual who does it. So now there's a private cause of action if they pass this. So if you're Nick Shirley and you go down there and you decide that you're going to record and, you know, knock on the door and record the person who comes to the door and ask them questions, and they decide that they want to sue you over it, just that action, which is clearly protected by the First Amendment, if they're enrolled in this witness protection program, essentially, they can sue. Which, what does it do? What is the whole purpose of it? They want to chill journalism. They want to chill investigation into fraud. Because if you're, how many just regular citizens embarked on this effort in Washington State to look up, use the publicly available databases, look up information on who was getting, you know, funds from the state or the federal government to run childcare facilities, and then they'd go knock on doors and they'd post what they found on social media, you know, no kids here, nothing to suggest there's a daycare being run here. So now you have these private individuals who would be subject, if a law like this were to pass in California, if they decide to do that, they'd be subject to lawsuits. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it because what private citizen who isn't part of some major corporation or media company is going to risk exposing themselves to a lawsuit that could cost them, just in attorney's fees to fight it, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. So that's what they want to do. They want to scare people like Nick Shirley and any other citizen who's interested in exposing fraudulent use of their taxpayer funds. They want to scare them away from doing it. It's absolutely insane. This is how a society veers into totalitarianism and complete government control. And there's a fear, right? It's just wild. And here's one of the craziest parts. So the state lawmaker who is doing all of this, who proposed the bill, she's the wife of the California Attorney General. You guys, you cannot make this stuff up. The legislator who proposed this bill is Mia Bonta, the wife of Attorney General Rob Bonta. Nick Shirley says the Attorney General of California's wife is trying to silence me and other journalists who are exposing frauds. And remember, Rob Bonta, he was criticizing Nick Shirley along with Governor Gavin Newsom. And then he was coming out and acting like, oh, we've made all these arrests. It had nothing to do with Nick Shirley, nothing to do with all the public pressure. We were investigating this fraud all along. And then he sends what? His wife? To go in to the assembly and put forth a bill to chill people from, like Nick Shirley, from ever doing that again and embarrassing the state of California and the lawmakers. So there was a hearing on this bill, and Republican State Assemblyman Carl DiMaio questioned his fellow assembly member Mia Bonta about this. And he asked about, you know, the chilling effect that this would have on journalists and independent journalists and their fraud investigations.
In Section 6218.19, it says a person, business, or association shall not knowingly publicly post or publicly display, disclose, or distribute on the internet, websites, or social media the personal information which relates to the worksite, those fake hospices that my colleague so diligently and effectively helped reveal in Los Angeles, or the Learing Center that Mr. Shirley revealed in Minnesota. Quote, any image of any designated immigration support services provider. You just acknowledged that those organizations would fall under the definition of designated immigration support services provider.
Assemblymember DiMaio, I acknowledged, just to clarify, because you're mischaracterizing what I supposedly acknowledged. What I acknowledged was that under the scenario that you offered, that individuals who were investigating were journalists. This bill ensures that we protect lawful free speech and opportunity for criticism.
Right, but what she's referring to there is the investigation from CBS News. So CBS News, under Barry Weiss, which CBS has been doing much better journalism under Barry Weiss, they went in and they did investigative work piggybacking off of what Nick Shirley did. And that's really when the state of California realized, oh, now we have a national news network that's exposing this. Now we have to treat it seriously. Now we have to go in and make arrests. When they didn't want to do it after Nick Shirley did it, but all CBS News did it now, now we're kind of screwed. But at the end there, when she says, well, obviously this wouldn't apply to journalists. Okay. Do you think that they consider Nick Shirley a journalist? I mean, look at how, again, Governor Gavin Newsom's office talks about and depicts Nick Shirley as a child sex predator. And look at what they're doing to me and Jonathan Cho and Ari Hoffman in the state of Washington. They're literally engaged in a legal battle with your money against us because they say that we're not members of the press and we can't have press passes. So when she says, oh, well, the bill, of course, doesn't apply to bona fide journalists, you really think that they consider Nick Shirley, under their weird, bizarre standards, to be a bona fide journalist? No, this is absolutely a bill aimed at people like Nick Shirley. One other thing that I think exposes the hypocrisy of all of this, and it's just wild that this is the Attorney General's wife. So, like Washington State and other blue states that have been, you know, where there have been protests and riots against ICE agents, in California, all the leaders are there like, we can't have this Gestapo, right? We can't have these ICE agents covering their faces. And Washington State just passed a law that prohibits ICE agents from wearing masks, even though they can't do that. They have no control over the ICE agents. But the sentiment is there nonetheless. They're saying, oh, these masked Gestapo here at the behest of Donald Trump. And so they want to take their masks off. And the problem, of course, is these ICE agents are being doxxed and their home addresses are being posted and pictures of their family members are being leaked publicly. Do you think that the California Assemblywoman wants to stop that from happening? No, they don't want to protect members of law enforcement who are being doxxed. They want to protect fraudsters who are being doxxed.
If this bill passes, certain political groups will have more protections, more privacy than law enforcement. How would you respond to that criticism?
This bill ensures that we have an opportunity when people are being harassed, docked, subjected to violence, to have the ability to be able to protect themselves.
How do these sentences come out of their mouth without them realizing the hypocrisy of it? This bill allows for people who are being harassed, doxed, and exposed to violence to have an opportunity to protect themselves. Literally the very reason why ICE agents want to be able to cover their faces during this insanity. But you don't care about them. You don't care if they die and people post their home addresses and their whole families are killed. You literally don't care. But the people where there's ample evidence that they're committing acts of fraud with taxpayer funds, we need them to be able to protect themselves. Blue states have lost their mind. Blue states have absolutely lost their minds. Speaking of, so there's all these indicators that are already happening very rapidly in Washington state that there is an exodus going on. We've had multiple individuals on the show who say, that's it, I'm leaving after the passage of an unconstitutional income tax that levies a 9.9% tax on individuals making over $1 million a year. And of course, there's an initiative that's going to happen. There's a lawsuit that's already been filed, but those could take a long time to be able to sort themselves out. And as I've said before, I think it's just too late. Because when you run a business, which a lot of these millionaires, you know, they're entrepreneurs, they're business owners, you're looking for stability. You're looking for reliability. You're looking for a place where you have an ability to grow over time and you're not worried about all these roadblocks that are going to be put up. So whether the income tax on millionaires is repealed by voters, is ruled unconstitutional, I just think in a lot of ways, it's too late. And I'm not saying, and I'm not encouraging everyone to give up or whatever it is, but we see all these indicators already. Here is a big one. So Nick Gurley, who's the CEO of a website called Reventure, it's an app that allows you to track real estate trends in your area. He posted something on X that got a lot of attention. He said, what's going on in Washington State? He said, housing supply is skyrocketing, now up to 17,580 listings. That's 64% above the long-term average for March. He said, it seems like, and I don't know if he's being like cute here or if he really doesn't know. He said, it seems like there's an exodus of sorts playing out with metros like Seattle and Spokane spiking on supply. He said, home values have already started declining in Washington and they might drop by a lot in the next year due to this inventory deluge. Gee, weird. That is so freaking strange. What could be happening to send our supply, which is the number of homes for sale on the market in any given month, up 64% along above long-term trends for this month of the year? Of course we know what's happening. And look at this laid out in a graphic just to show you how really troubling that is. I mean, remember when things were just booming and moving and grooving? I mean, even back in like 2019, this time of year, there was 13,800 homes on the market. And the average is 10,000, by the way, if you want to compare this to typically in a given month or this month of the year, how many homes are on the market. It's usually 10,785. Look at that, 17,590. And this isn't a surprise to anyone who like has even casual conversations with friends and family. I was with my friend Nancy, who went to the spa the other day before I picked up my little mutt down here, who's behaving quite well today, might I add, before we picked her up from the vet. And we were talking about just in her neighborhood, her friend group, and they're like in their, you know, late 50s, early 60s, how many lifelong Washington residents who they've lived by for years are picking up and moving specifically to Florida? Specifically to Florida. And we hear from it all the time. Wes, who's our real estate advertiser on the show, he's like, it's insane. Nonstop people wanting to leave the state, listing their homes. Again, it's not rocket science. And it's why, you know, what did the Democrats say in Olympia? Oh, capital flight? I've seen no evidence of capital flight. Jeff Bezos, Howard Schultz, sort of some big examples of capital flight. They will ignore all the evidence until, I guess, things get so bad that they can't ignore it anymore. And just the examples we've gave you, I want to revisit them because hopefully they have the same wake up here. The estate tax increase. Last year, they made us have the highest estate tax rate in the nation. This year, they undid it because they're like, oh, old rich people are leaving. The tax on luxury aircraft. Last year, they were warned, well, if you do that, people will just have their luxury aircraft be in a hangar somewhere else. That's what happened. So what do they do this year? They repealed it. So again, you just have to apply the same logic to the income tax on millionaires. And the exact same thing is happening as we speak. They're not even waiting for it to go into effect. This thing doesn't go into effect for like 3 years. And they're already like, nah, before their home values plummet. They're like, I'm going to get out of this house now. And I think some of these expensive houses, like we showed some examples, some of the really expensive ones and the high price points, those are going to sit for a long time. Because again, who's coming in with that kind of wealth? So it's going to be bad news. They're going to have to sit on those houses for a long time or dramatically reduce the prices. So, and Mike and I mean, we'd even talked about getting, you know, maybe a place in Florida, like a condo in Florida or something, renting it out for part of the year because we love Florida, and then having it for one day when we want to retire. But now I'm like, we kind of missed the boat. Because now the prices, and this is going to be true in Florida, and Florida is going to have to deal with the reality of this. Their home values are skyrocketing. Their home values are about on par with where Seattle is right now. And for Florida, that's insane. In certain parts of Florida, like Miami, where all the tech bros are going, and Howard Schultz and Jeff Bezos are moving and all those things. So we're about to have a big shift in where it's expensive and inexpensive to live in this country. So all that nice equity you built up, Nicole, since you moved into your place, how much equity have you built up?
About 100.
Yeah, and you didn't move in that long ago.
Just 2020.
And now it's like, boop, it's going to go down. It's going to be unfortunate. All right, coming up next, there is a big push for bail reform in the state of Washington, and it is going to be a disaster. If you think things are bad now and you think there's already a bad headlines around low bail and no bail, you just wait for bail reform. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing, if you're already thinking about your list of to-dos as the weather gets nicer, today being an exception to that because we had all that sun and now it's just dumping on us again. It's very depressing. But it's also a good test of how your roof is holding up and how your gutters are holding up. And if you're thinking, look, I've got the life of my roof is coming to an end. Well, this is a great time to reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing because they're offering a bundle and save. So you get 10% off the entire job when you add new gutters to any new roofing project. Plus, Valentine also offers those gutter guards to help keep leaves and needles out for good, giving you an additional layer of defense against clogged and overflowing gutters. And I think this is really the best time of the year to do that. And if you're replacing your roof anyway, you might as well replace your gutters. And now to get a bundle and save, I think is great. So reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing to schedule your free estimate. Make sure you tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided and bring up that 10% bundle and save. And talk to them about, you know, sort of the estimate for that. So 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. All right. So we've seen for a long time in the state of Washington, the left urge bail reform. They say our bail system is unfair to the poor who are having to stay behind bars as they await trial for extended periods of time. But there is currently a decision that might be made by the end of this month by the Washington State Supreme Court that could completely overhaul how bail works in the state of Washington. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to get involved in saving this state we love. So we found this article going back all the way to 2016 from the ACLU of Washington. No money, no freedom. ACLU says Washington's bail system is fundamentally unfair and calls for reform. It says the ACLU has issued a position paper examining the many harms of jailing people in Washington before trial when they are unable to pay bail money and recommending principles for reform. So this has been going on for years and years and years, and the media in Washington state has also been covering this. I mean, KUOW article, people are sitting in jail because they're too poor to post bail. Cashless bail helps keep families together. Trump wants to shut it down. From the Seattle Times, an opinion piece that was published very recently, Washington needs to reform discriminatory bail system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what exactly is happening here? Now, this isn't something that the legislature is considering via a bill, you know, our duly elected representatives, not that I always think they do a particularly bang up job. This is a proposed rule change that's being sent to the Washington State Supreme Court for consideration. So it's the state's high court that is going to get to decide, which of course it's stacked with a lot of progressives right now, that gets to decide whether sweeping changes to how courts across the state of Washington, you know, judges impose bail and deal with bail, if these changes will go into effect. So on Sundays with Subscribers this week, we were joined by Courtney Weimer. She is the Washington State Bail Agents Association president. She's worked as a bail agent for a really long time, and she described some of these changes to us.
So by my understanding, there's about four major parts of this proposal. The first part is that it takes out the language that allows judges to deny bail on capital offenses. The second part is that it changes the language from likelihood to fail to appear to willful flight, which then would force prosecutors to prove why that person missed court, which is almost impossible. And then it basically gives somebody like a free pass on their first missed court date. The third part of that is that it would cap most gross misdemeanor and warrant amounts at $200. So it'd be $20 to get out of jail. And then the fourth part of that is that anybody with an ID can go into the court and just pay the 10% without any accountability for the other 90%. I mean, we had a situation in King County about 3 weeks ago now, promoting prostitution, sex trafficking, set at $200,000. The guy had gun charges in other counties, and a couple of girls walked in with an ID and $20,000
cash. Wow. Insane. And what they're calling it essentially is a get out of jail free card. So, and what would even be the point if you have a judge that sets bail at like $100,000? Okay, but now you have a system where they just have to pay 10% directly to the court, and they don't even have to show that they have collateral or something of value worth the other 90% to be able to seize if they fail to appear. So it's the same thing as just setting their bail at 10 grand cash. It's insane. It makes literally no sense. And, you know, Courtney says, and I've said this before, you know, I've had family members who've been in, what do they call it? Criminal justice involved? Is that it? Is that the nice phrase? You know, going back to my dad, you know, he was criminal justice involved quite a bit in his life. And I understand some of the concerns where if you've got two people sitting in jail charged with the same crime, if one has money and maybe a house that they can use as collateral, they can get out much easier than someone who doesn't. But one of the issues here is if you're familiar with how the system works, there are only certain things that a judge can consider when imposing bail. You know, likelihood to reappear. Is this person have, you know, a long history of warrants bench warrants where they haven't reappeared in other cases. That's a pretty good indicator that they're not likely to reappear. So then you want to set their bail a little bit higher, right? Danger to the community if they're released. That's why for violent crimes, bail is typically set higher, because you have somebody who's already shown that they're potentially a danger to the community, and so the bail can get up. And then ability to pay. If you have someone who's indigent, literally homeless, that's why you see them released on little to no bail, because bail is a constitutional right. You have a right to bail, reasonable bail. And so judges already have to take into consideration someone's financial ability to pay and the inherent fairness or unfairness of where you set your bail. Courtney says this really is solving for a problem that doesn't exist.
So judges already take into consideration somebody's financial situation. It is written into Court Rule 3.2 that they're supposed to do that. So it's not like, hey, little Johnny that's never been in trouble before, but doesn't have any money is sitting in jail. No, it's the guy that, hey, I don't have any money, but I've got 37 warrants and 23 misdemeanors, and I'm sitting in jail and don't have money. And so that's, I think, the frustrating part, is that if you don't have history and you don't have money, judges are going to take that into consideration and more than likely release you anyway.
Yeah.
And so to sit here and say, well, it's just the poor people sitting in jail, well, that's frustrating, because regardless of your financial situation, if you have a bunch of criminal history or warrant history, shouldn't you be sitting in jail anyway?
Yeah. And here's the other thing. Bail and judges setting bail in our state, especially over the last 10 years, they're already, the bails are already so low. And I talked to Courtney about this because I've known Courtney for years. Back when I was a wee little like 21-year-old crime reporter when I first came to Seattle like 15 years ago, one of the things I did almost on a daily basis is I went to first appearances. You'd go down and you'd literally go to the King County Jail and you'd sit there and you'd see who was arrested overnight. And they'd go before a judge and they'd have their bail set and you'd figure out if there was anything worth covering that hadn't already been put out. You know, social media wasn't like as prevalent where you had all the police departments and stuff who were already saying, here's who was arrested. So you had to like literally go sit there. And that's where I met Courtney and other bail agents. And I'd sit there with them and, you know, we'd hear what people did and we'd hear what the judge set their bail at. And back then, I rarely remember being surprised. I rarely remember being like, that's not very much bail for what they did. Usually it was pretty commensurate with the crime that they were accused of. And I haven't been back for first appearances a long time, but I asked Courtney about this on Sundays with Subscribers when she was on with us. And she said, I'm surprised daily. She said, I'm surprised daily with the people who they cut loose with without having to post any bail at all. She's constantly surprised about the very low bail amounts for people accused of horrible violent crimes. So we already have de facto bail reform in the state of Washington. We already have judges, we cover them all the time on the show, who are notorious for low bail or no bail, even in instances where you've had individuals who have been arrested and in and out 10 times, 20 times, 30 times, 40 times. So it's just, it's again, I think, they've instituted bail reform without doing it in an official way. So I think it'll make the public safety crisis much worse. But I also think reasonable people can have a conversation about, you know, if this is a constitutional right, is the balance unfair to people who are poor? And do we need to do something about that specifically? So I asked subscribers in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals and X, do you believe the current bail system is unfair to the poor? Nicole, are you got a bleeding heart for the poor?
No, I think, I mean, I don't have a lot of experience with it, but I think it's pretty fair.
Have you ever been arrested?
No.
Oh, good for you.
Knock on wood.
Good for you. That makes one of us here on Undivided. Go ahead.
But I do think the judges are not always fair. So that's a real problem I see here is that we have these judges that are making weird choices.
Yeah,
I think you get a sense, or they feel sympathetic towards the more poor and get off easier.
Well, and people of color. We've seen them make bail choices and lower bail based on skin pigmentation, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. I would say in other states, potentially my answer would be yes. But I think in Washington, it's no. They've shown that like they're willing to let people go who've been in and out a million times mm-hmm. on no bail whatsoever. So my answer would be no. And most of you agree, 94% of you saying, no, I don't think our bail system as it's established is unfair to the poor. Pickle man, bail is set to make sure people come to trial. It's not a welfare system to get a free pass. Yeah, also interesting that little thing that Courtney added, that it also changes fail to appear. And they let people make an excuse for failing to appear. So there's not a bench warrant. Like, oh no, I was sick that day. It's like, wait, what?
And that's, you really don't
you
have-
You didn't call the court?
You don't know? Have to prove it. You don't have to have a doctor's note.
Yeah, Y says, no, it's not unfair. It's the money they have to pay if they don't show up to court. Maybe they lose the 10% they pay, but considering the crime requiring bail, I think it's good they have to be held accountable. Also, they don't have to take it. I also watched your Sunday show and learned that they take their financial situation into consideration. So absolutely, I do not think it's unfair. Midnight Rider says, if the law is being adjudicated equally, then absolutely not. No one individual should escape punishment based on financial issues. Most lawbreakers don't care about the financial impact on their victims. So cry me a river. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, I would also say, and this isn't always true, I mean, rich people commit heinous crimes. Dateline literally is built around it. Like, not a lot of Dateline's not covering a lot of stories where it's like an impoverished person, you know, killed someone for to steal from them. But a lot of crime is committed by people who are poor because they're committed with a financial motivation, you know, getting money to buy drugs or whatever it is. So, and if you're comfortable in life, you tend not to commit crimes as readily because you don't have a lot of issues in your life that you're dealing with where you think it has to drive you into a life of crime. If you'd like to watch that interview with Courtney from Sundays with Subscribers, you can do that by signing up to become a subscriber. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. We do interesting in-depth interviews on topics every Sunday just for subscribers. And that segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action and do something. If you're mad at the state of things in Washington, they send out newsletters with ample opportunities to get involved and make your voice heard. And I think they have some really cool functions that make it easier to just click, have your voice heard, and all that stuff. So future42.org. All right, coming up next, King 5 doing a fair, I think, story on crime and the federal government's efforts to fight crime being committed by illegal aliens. So I'm feeling generous today. We'll do a nice story on King 5 News. First, our friend Wes Jones, who again is probably inundated right now with requests from people who want his help to move out of state. He was just sending us an email about some undivided viewers and listeners who used Wes to move to Arizona. And I'm like, no, we're losing our friends. I don't like it. But if you're thinking about leaving the state, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. Evan W. gives Wes 5 stars, says this was a tough multifamily transaction with a buyer who was often unreasonable and difficult. Wes stayed professional, kept the deal together, and pushed it to the finish line when it could have easily blown up. That takes experience and grit. I appreciate the effort and look forward to the next deal. So go to sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. One of the great things on the website is you can go see who sold with Wes and get an example of some of the outcomes he's been able to achieve for other clients, which I think is always a good thing. And then you can use their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. And from there, the very best thing to do is get a free market analysis from Wes. He'll basically just have a can chat with you about the state of the market. As we discussed earlier, inventory is on the rise. That might impact how long it takes to sell your home, the value you can get for your home, etc. And he'll come up with a strategy, of course, to make sure you can sell it for the most possible money, which is what we all want. Wes Jones and Associates, sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. King 5 News, which typically is the most biased to the left news station in Seattle, I actually thought they did a pretty good story speaking to federal prosecutors about their strategy in trying to deal with and diminish crimes committed by illegal aliens. So this is the headline from King 5. Federal prosecutors stepping up illegal reentry cases in Washington, citing state policy conflicts. It says that federal prosecutors are filing 6 to 10 cases per week. And they are also very critical of the Keep Washington Working Act, which is our state's sanctuary policy that shields illegal aliens. So it's interesting because we don't talk about this angle of immigration enforcement very often. You know, you've got the angle where it's like illegal aliens who have committed a crime, the feds find out about them and they want to deport them from the country. But these specifically are people who've, you know, already either already committed a crime or been deported for some other reason, and they keep coming back. And it's like, no, if our immigration laws are going to mean something and we go through all the effort to get you out of the country, yeah, we're going to have a problem if you come right back. And so they're trying to track these people down. It says federal prosecutors in Western Washington say they're stepping up illegal reentry cases, pointing to what they describe as a growing effort to prevent people with criminal histories from coming right back into a community near you. First Assistant U.S. Attorney Charles Neil Floyd told King 5 his office is now filing 6 to 10, as I said, of those cases per week. They say it's part of a broader initiative aimed at intervening earlier in cases involving people previously deported from the United States. He said the intervention could prevent future crimes. Quote, if the state had cooperated, we might have saved someone from becoming a victim in the first place. And this is really so smart because you already have someone, again, who's committed a crime and been deported from the country as a result. But you have states like Washington, sanctuary jurisdictions. And they're a sanctuary not only for people who really genuinely came to the U.S. for a better life, but people who came to the U.S. and preyed on our citizens and who realize that all I got to do is get to Washington State and I can fold back into society and the state will protect me from the feds. And the feds are like, no, we're going to find you. We're going to track you down and we're going to remove you from the country yet again. And the problem is it's so cyclical because if there's states and there's multiple states like Washington that do this, like California, for instance, that's where they're going to go. And so we're going to get more of these people into deep blue sanctuary states who've already committed crimes, been deported, and then they come back for shelter. And they come back for shelter. The article goes on to say, Floyd said the effort is part of an initiative known as Operation Pick and Roll. I want to know who names the ops. Operation Pick and Roll, which began before he took office, but is now being implemented with priority. Illegal reentry, which is returning to the U.S. after deportation, can be charged as a federal crime. First-time entry without documentation is typically a misdemeanor. However, reentry after removal can be charged as a felony. Floyd said these federal charges allow authorities to obtain judicial warrants and prevent individuals from being released from local custody. He said you have to have a federal crime in order to get a criminal arrest warrant. He said my objective is to get them into the immigration system and see if they're eligible for anything that would allow them to remain here. He said, if they're not, then yes, removal may be the outcome. And, you know, this is where I struggle so much because local jurisdictions that are having crime issues, they should be standing back and letting the feds take the criminals out of the community. Even if publicly, I wouldn't even care. If publicly, Katie Wilson and Bob Ferguson and Nick Brown were like, no, you can't touch the criminals. And then behind the scenes, they were like, hey, go get them, you know, take them out. I wouldn't even care. Because we have the lowest number of police officers per capita, as you know, of any state in the nation. We need the help. We have officers who barely have enough resources to respond to life or death emergencies. We should be bending over backward to help the feds take known criminals out of our state and send them back to their country of origin. Instead, we stand in their way at every juncture. And Seattle, we talked about getting ready for the World Cup. Where are some of the people down? Andrea Suarez talks about this all the time. She's talked about it for years, even before Trump was in office for a second time and really cracking down on immigration enforcement. The Hondurans. You know who runs a lot of the prostitution and drug trafficking in downtown Seattle? The Hondurans. Illegal Hondurans. They even started running their illegal food cart racket. Remember where they were like just slinging, you know, unrefrigerated meat on some black tops like down by the stadiums? Hello, Lucky. Thank you. Oh, you can see her cone. Look how big her cone is. Wow, you are cute. I know. Just calm down. And so, yeah, you know, we could deal with a lot of the drug crisis, the prostitution crisis, a lot of stuff. If you dealt with the illegal Hondurans, you could even deal with the unrefrigerated hot dogs being sold to sports fans down by the stadiums, but they won't do it. One more thing I want to talk about, just since we're on the public safety topic. We mentioned we had Democratic state lawmaker Maury Levitt on the show, who was livid that Governor Bob Ferguson vetoed $500,000 that would have helped with organized retail theft, which we have one of the worst organized retail theft problems in the nation in Washington State. Billions of dollars in an impact to our local economy. And Governor Ferguson, who cares, who says he cares about organized retail theft, he even started an organized retail theft task force when he was the attorney general, vetoed like a measly $500,000 to help local police departments deal with this. He was asked about, I think this is from the Center Square, he was asked about the criticism of that line item veto.
As attorney general, I literally created a unit that prosecutes organized retail theft, created a group of people who get together, law enforcement, retailers, businesses, to talk about how we can improve that. So there literally are more resources today to combat and actually bring cases organized retail theft because not working in the AG's office than we ever had before.
Okay.
So no, I take it very seriously. At the same time, look, we've got a budget we have to balance. And you know, there were cuts in this budget. Our state agencies took $1 billion in cuts.
Yeah, here's an idea again, ad nauseum. Cut the money you give prison inmates to get boob jobs and laser hair removal. Cut that money, and you'd be able to spend even more money on organized retail theft because you spend way more than $500,000 to give transgender prison inmates boob jobs and laser hair removal and specialized doctors than you're spending on organized retail theft. And only one of those pays for itself. The boob job for the transgender inmate doesn't pay for itself. In fact, you know, when you put them in the women's prison, somebody's going to end up suing the state of Washington, so it's actually going to cost us even more money. The one thing that does pay for itself, stopping the economic harm that organized retail theft has in our state. But this is what happens when you're driven by ideology and not common sense. Ridiculous. All right, we'll get to national news. A couple dual resignations in Congress. Just purging Congress of the sexual deviance. I love it. First, if you're looking to save some money as a family, take another look at your insurance. Maybe you've just been with the same insurance provider for a long time. You think they have your best interest in mind. They're proactively looking for ways to save you money, but maybe they're not. So it costs you no money to take the FirstMark challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. So many members of the Undivided family are also members of the FirstMark family. I get my insurance through FirstMark. Nicole does. Our business is insured through FirstMark. I mean, gosh, I talk to people on a daily basis who are like, oh, thanks for referring me to FirstMark. I'm saving hundreds of dollars a month or thousands of dollars a year. They go out, they search dozens of major carriers for you, find the best price and coverage. Should you ever need that insurance, you can pick up the phone, skip the phone tree bot, talk to a real person. That's the other thing. You call their number, beep, 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 ring, ring, real human being, local, working local. I mean, you just don't get that with other companies. So FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. You weren't impressed with my sound effects there.
Oh, I love them. What are you talking about?
You know what I want to go back to? As soon as I retire from this job, whenever that is, many moons from now, I'm going to throw my cell phone in a river.
Oh, I believe it.
I'm deleting my social media. Not that I don't love you guys. And I'm getting a landline.
Okay.
And that's it. And then
I'm going to
get a pager. And my landline isn't going to ring. It's going to go to a voicemail that says, if this is an actual emergency, mm-hmm. page her. And she'll get back to you in 24 to 48 hours. I cannot wait for that. I'm so excited. I mean, I have like, if you've texted me recently and I haven't responded, I have like 1,000 unread text messages on my phone. So mm-hmm. don't think it's personal. It's not. It's personal. From my perspective, I can't keep up. I can't keep up. All right. And of course, all Undivided viewers and listeners who've been loyal will get my beeper number. Yes. So, all right. In national news, two resignations from Congress. And I just read that it actually, Congressman Swalwell actually has filed it with the clerk effective immediately. Mm-hmm. So Swalwell's no longer a member of Congress, and he's no longer a candidate to be the governor of California. Have you ever seen such a swift takedown of a politician in history?
Well, if it and was then, that, because we've, like I said, like he's been a creeper for a long time.
Right. But that's what I'm saying is like when they decided to go in for the kill, when Democrats decided they wanted him gone, just like that.
When the Democrats decided.
Oh, right. 100%. So Rep. Tony Gonzalez, who's the Republican who was dating that staffer and she killed herself, like lit herself on fire and all the insane stuff he was messaging her emerged. He said, there's a season for everything and God has a plan for us all. When Congress returns tomorrow, I will file my retirement from office. It has been my privilege to serve the great people of Texas. Good riddance. I added that last part. Eric Swalwell said, I'm deeply sorry to my family. We've already read, you know, it's same thing he wrote on X, basically. He said, I'll work with my staff in the coming days to ensure they are able, in my absence, to serve the needs of the good people of the 14th Congressional District. He says, I'm aware of efforts to bring an immediate expulsion vote against me. And that's why he said, he complained about it. He said, expelling anyone from Congress without due process within days of allegation being made is wrong. But it's also wrong for my constituents to have me distracted from my duties. Therefore, I resign my seat in Congress, which he did this morning. And this comes after, you know, a couple of stories, one in the San Francisco Chronicle, CNN, other videos circulating online of him making out with, kind of a forced makeout, honestly, of what appears to be a sex worker surfaced. And I've seen all these rumors that there's more coming. I really have to sneeze. Can you?
I did a really poor job of muting on
that. I think I'm allergic to you. Lucky, it's fine. It's fine. If you don't know, my dog's here because she's injured and we're trying to get her across the finish line finally after 3.5 months, and so I have to have eyes on her at all times, and my husband can't bring her to work.
Although my car was covered in pollen the other day, and I know that you could have issues with that.
I sneeze so much. I am America's number one sneezer.
Oh, those were pretty quiet compared to your usual sneeze, so I wish people could hear that.
That's okay. I think she intentionally didn't mute my mic because she wants you to hear how bad my sneezes are. All right, Arizona's governor vetoing a school choice opportunity that President Trump is giving to all states. And of course, blue states are like, no. Although Arizona has been pretty good on school choice, so I think this kind of surprised people. So just a reminder of this school choice bonus that President Trump is floating. So it is, it's his school choice initiative creates a federal tax credit scholarship program. So families can use it at private, faith-based, public charter schools. It offers taxpayers a dollar-for-dollar credit of up to $1,700 for contributions to scholarship-granting organizations to help pay for tuition and educational services. To me, it's like such a no-brainer. If you support school choice and the idea that, you know, if you don't want to send your kid to a public school, you should be able to send them to a school that works for them, and it doesn't cost states anything. So it's so weird to see states, and it's the teachers' union. It's the teachers' unions who want to hold kids hostage in public schools and not allow them to get the best possible education for them. It's the only reason. So Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs being criticized for vetoing this, and she didn't make any sort of public pronouncement. You literally would have had to go to her website, go to a long list of actions she made on bills, and buried in there was SB 1142, the federal tax credit authorization for scholarships, which had passed through the state legislature in Arizona. The Arizona GOP criticizing her for this. Senate Republicans saying the legislation was designed to give families access to a new federal scholarship tax credit. She said this, the measure would have allowed taxpayers to claim the federal tax credit. And they said it wouldn't have created any new spending for the state of Arizona. So they're just baffled by it. Senate Republicans said this was a missed opportunity for Arizona families, especially low-income, disabled, and underserved students who need more options to succeed. Parents are asking for flexibility and support, and this decision closes the door on resources that could have helped meet their children's unique needs. So that's a bummer. Our friend Corey DeAngelis has been tracking which states have said yes and which states have said no. He was pretty critical of Katie Hobbs deciding to veto this, considering, as he points out, she went to a private school. Isn't that always how it works?
Oh, yeah.
Every freaking time. Bob Ferguson sends his kids to a private school, yet wants to make it more difficult and more expensive for you to send your kids to a private school. That in and of itself should just wake people up. According to the White House, here are the states that have opted in and opted out. As you'll see, our state has a little red X on it, as does the whole West Coast. No school choice benefits for you. Colorado, we talked about this a while ago when Colorado opted in, which I thought was great. Jared Polis, at the time, I can't remember exactly his statement, but he's like, why wouldn't I? It doesn't cost us any money and it only helps families. Literally, why would I not opt into that?
Right.
So I remember we gave him a lot of credit at the time for that.
It just encourages public schools to step it up a little.
Right. Competition. Competition improves everyone. So we look at the free market.
Corey was also reporting that Hobbs's sister is like the president of a union.
Oh, wow. There it is.
Interesting.
Shocking. All right. Love this. Not a surprise. But there's more and more studies being done across the world on the impacts of how gender dysphoria is treated in youth and the impacts of, you know, this period of time of mutilation of kids and puberty blockers and really debunking some of the key talking points from Democrats, which has been, oh my gosh, you have to do this for kids or they'll do what? They'll off themselves, which is the sickest thing to sell to a family, that you've got to mutilate your kid for the rest of their lives or, you know, they'll take their own life. It's insane. So there's yet another study, this one out of Finland, that's debunking a key argument, which is your kid will get better if they just get gender therapy. This from Human Events. Child sex changes do not cure mental health issues. Wow. And in fact, it can make it even worse. So in Finland, which the rest of the world is really out in front of the United States, in a sense, it's because they went down the dark path first. And so they're coming out on the other side a little sooner. But the study, let's talk a little bit about what the study looked into, its methods, and then the conclusion that the study found. So it says psychiatric morbidity among adolescents and young adults who contacted specialized gender identity services in Finland. So they are looking at, it says the methods, Finnish nationwide cohort of all under 23-year-old gender-referred individuals. So they looked at individuals who are under the age of 23, who referred for these specialized gender care for kids from 1996 and then also in 2019. So they wanted to look at basically the differences in outcomes for when this was being done with kids in 1996, before it became a trend and a fad, and before people, kids were being pushed into this. And then they wanted to look at the results in 2019. So they said gender-referred adolescents showed significantly higher psychiatric morbidity than controls both before and after referral. So even 2 years after being referred for this sort of care that was supposed to make them better, they had significantly higher psychiatric morbidity. And the conclusion was severe psychiatric morbidity is common among gender-referred adolescents and appears to be more prevalent in those referred after the recent surge in referrals. And then it said psychiatric needs they found do not subside after medical gender reassignment. That's the key. For all this talk of, oh, you better let your kid get a sex change or they're going to do the worst thing imaginable, in Finland, they said, lucky you're fine. I love you. In Finland, they said, that's not the case. You still had psychiatric issues even after, imagine that, after you take a perfectly healthy kid and you decide you're going to cut their genitals off or whatever it is, you thought that would make them better mentally? No, it's not going to make them better. It's obviously going to make them worse. And this Finnish study found that. Lucky, you need to stop. I love you so much, but you're distracting everyone. Come here. I love you.
Pick it up on my...
Oh, she has a cone that just absolutely bombards everything. All right, we'll get to subscriber comments. Here's her little face. Subscriber comments coming up next. First, if you're worried about... I mean, there's a lot of things going on right now. Tech layoffs, AI, crypto, what's happening in Iran. If you're worried about how that could impact your retirement portfolio, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital for a second opinion. That's really what it is. And I think we get second opinions on so many things in life. And why would you not get a second opinion on one of the most important decisions you'll make? And that's who's going to manage your money in retirement to get you to retirement. So reach out to Zach. He'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management. Always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, get your personalized Know Your Risk portfolio review while you're there, and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap. So it keeps you up to date on everything happening in the economy globally, nationally. knowyourriskpodcast.com. I remember there was this time, very beginning of the pandemic, where I was on Fox 13 News at the time, and we were doing the morning news like from our homes. Remember, everybody was doing stuff from home. You were taking meetings from home. The news was from home. And remember, it was funny for like 2 weeks when people's dogs would bark and like cats would jump in their shot. And then it was like, good God, get your dog somewhere where they're not in the way. That's how I feel about Lucky right now. The era of it being cute when your dog disrupts your work, it was done like 5 years ago, Lucky. If you guys only knew, though, the drama that I have been through with this dog, 4 months in a cone, 3 surgeries. I mean, she was at the emergency vet and the vet for a whole week.
And it should have been just a little surgery. Yeah. No big deal.
So the reason she's here is because we have 4 more days and she gets her sutures out. And I told my husband, I said, I am going to be like a dog on a bone with her for 4 days. I'm not letting her out of my sight. Because I just, after all this, it has to be done. And I got to get her out of that cone because I have bruises. I have circular bruises on the backs of my leg because she follows me and she sort of hits me with her cone. And so I'm going to Cabo on Sunday and I got these circular bruises. And it's just like, anyway, that's my life. Is this a good time to tell everybody we don't have shows next week?
Oh, there you go.
Might as well drop it. Taking a spring break next week. It's Nicole's birthday. Well, not. I think you miss pretty it close. A little bit, but pretty close. She's going somewhere sunny. I'm going somewhere sunny. We'll update you on that, but we're not going to have shows next week. All right. On California Democrats trying to criminalize journalism, Bruce Fersche says whoever is upset because of Nick Shirley is behind it. Yes. Doth protest too much. Late Night with Tina. This is all designed to shut down dissent and any attempts to point out wrongdoing. I agree.
It points out their misses, right? So it's been happening for so long and they missed it. And now they're like, let's just shoot the messenger.
Oh, 100%. Graham Robbins, harassed, eh? Yeah, I'm sure it sucks when a private citizen shines a light on all of the fraud, abuse, and criminal behavior they're engaged in. Poor criminals. Mm-hmm. But that's the Democrat way. It's always about helping the criminal. Law-abiding, screw you.
Unless they catch it first. And then he'll find it out.
Yeah, they're like, wow, yeah.
Then he'll brag.
On houses for sale in Washington skyrocketing, B. Loris and Dems will take credit for it, saying they made housing more affordable. That's a really good point.
You know what? When we were when you were talking about that, that was going through my head. I'm like, maybe this was their plan.
Yeah.
Just to make housing more affordable.
And for the record, I'm not saying it wouldn't be okay for housing prices to come down a little bit. During the pandemic, I mean, there were homes in my neighborhood. And our house is like, I want to say 2,000 square feet. It's not gigantic. And there were homes around that size in our neighborhood that were going for like $1.8 million.
Oh, yeah. No, it was ridiculous.
Right. That's absurd.
I think what's sad is that, I mean, it has been 5-6 years of these obnoxious housing prices. Yeah. So the people that tried to get into these houses that are now going to lose on their houses, that's going to be
100%.
A really sad thing because it's going to be a lot of younger adults.
Yep. And then they're going to be underwater almost immediately. Yes. Yeah. And what will Democrats say? We've brought down housing prices by ruining our state's economy. Mm-hmm. Geniuses. You guys are so smart. Looking up for Jesus, yet the sellers will not lower prices. Imagine paying property tax on a $600,000 house that's only worth $200,000. Renny Kipola, we bought a house in Florida during COVID. We will be leaving Washington soon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You bought at the right time in Florida. That's for sure. On bail reform, H-O-X-N-M-R Niner. I don't know how to read that. Clallam Bay Prison has a new game room. Inmates are able to play video games now. Priorities. I was at Clallam Bay Prison maybe 15 years ago doing a story on a solitary confinement program. That's real. You go to Clallam Bay, you're out there.
Yeah.
There ain't no one coming to visit you. So I think that they deserve to have a game room because they're not getting any visitors way out there.
Well, it depends on what they're in for.
That's
whether
true.
They deserve it.
Yes. Doug Troyer, same old thing. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. But that doesn't work in Seattle now. Matthew Cook, how about a study on the harms caused by released criminals on the public? No, they can't study that.
No.
Absolutely cannot study that. Constance Ann, they are finding ways to generate income from criminal activity, basically. Yeah, by saying pay it directly to court. But then the court, you know, they're never going to be able to recoup the money that they're not going to be paid. Because like a bail bondsman, if they have to, which is super rare, they'll go after what you put up as collateral.
Right.
But having to have that collateral, like, oh, my mom signed her house over, you're coming back to court. Like, you know what I mean? So,
hope so.
Unless you're a horrible human being, which
some
might be. Kevin Chambers, the problem is liberal judges don't see the difference between a jaywalker and a rapist. They will let both out on low bail. Society forced them into their criminal lifestyle. As a very frequent jaywalker, they would definitely give me $1 million bail. Can you imagine? By the way, I checked. I don't think the attorney general sent a goon squad in to serve a search warrant yesterday.
Not yet.
Nope, not yet. Maybe soon. But can you imagine my bail? $1 million. If I ever commit a crime, $1 million.
Well, it depends on which judge. Have we covered them?
Doesn't matter. Basically everyone. Comic-Con Boo Boo says, what about the registry that DSHS created that you have no way to get off of, which anyone can make accusations to be vindictive towards you? What is that about? Yeah, what about the registry? I have no idea what that is. Moon Goddess, are you sure blue states really had a mind to begin with? When I moved here, it wasn't this bad. There were frustrations, but it was not like this. I moved here right at the end of Christine Gregoire's time.
I was going to say, it might have been moving in that direction, but it's definitely, again, we've said this many times, but the Democratic Party of today is not the Democratic Party of 40, 50 years ago.
It's not the Democratic Party of 7 years ago.
Yeah, 30.
Yeah, before 2020 and all that insanity, things changed. Right. But this is a sad one. Big Princess says, saying goodbye to my special 15-year-old dog, Smokey. Please give your dog a hug. I am so sorry. Having just gone through that with our dog, Mackenzie, 15 years is a great long life. That I'm sure that Smokey was so loved, but that is the hardest thing in the world. So take some time to cry it out. And do what you need to do. It's just horrible. So we're so sorry. All right, we'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, become a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. It's about $260 a year. And it's like kind of, in one way, a concierge service for you where they can help you with your screening and forms and everything you need to run a rental unit. If you're like new to it or you just need some help keeping up with changing laws and regulations, they also have a ton of events across the state all year long. And those events are great for really anyone interested in politics and housing policy. I'm sure given some of the stuff we've covered today on what's happening in the housing market, those will be some good events to go to in the year to come. And then they're down in Olympia advocating for good housing policy on your behalf. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. We appreciate our friends at the RHA for being wonderful supporters of our show for so long. It is Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Oh, they can't let it go. Just one. Show me one Democrat. I'm sure there's one out there somewhere who's been morally consistent on gas prices, that called out Democrats and Biden over the high taxes and Washington state and the climate policies, because I am more than happy to give them airtime to complain about high gas prices under Donald Trump because of Iran. But the problem is no one's got any moral consistency anymore, including Congresswoman Susan DelBene of Washington.
The average price of gasoline across Washington state is $5.40 a gallon. That's a dollar more than it was before this reckless war started in Iran. And even in Western Washington, it's even more. It's hurting families, making it harder when people are already struggling with high prices. All because of this reckless war, it has to end.
Interesting. Can you find, can you play the video of her from about a year and a half ago under Biden during the summer when the CCA went into effect, when our gas prices were about the same? Can you play that video for me, please? Nicole, play the video from when gas prices were that high because of Jay Inslee.
Weird.
Oh, it doesn't exist?
Can't find one.
Strange. Weird. All right, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided with special guest Lucky. We will try harder tomorrow to corral her with her big old cone. I love you, Lucky. I just want you to get better. And that's it. I never knew I could love a dog and despise a dog so much at the same time. I don't despise her. I just am sick of being abused by the cone. Especially when I'm going to Cabo and I'm going to have these bruises all over the back of my legs.
Ugh. Well, you'll have to maybe get a little tan to cover them up.
Yeah, we both know that I don't tan very well. If you'd like to support our show, we would love that. That's how this show is possible. A combination of our wonderful advertisers and you, the dedicated viewers and listeners. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. You just click on the banner that says support the show. And it's as simple as that. It's $5 a month, which I think is a pretty good deal. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.